As we finish up our series on ancient words, this morning we're going to finish with the life of John Bunyan. Let me just give you just an overview, a history of John's life. A man that I'm sure we're all familiar with, but there's some interesting facts about him, things that we might not know. He's more than just the author of Pilgrim's Progress. He was born in 1628 to a very poor family in the village of Elstow, England. And he grew up in a season of life that was very fearful for the country. Over the course of his 60 years in England, England suffered through plagues, particularly the bubonic plague. They suffered through many, many civil wars, the many changes in their both parliament and their monarchy as King Charles I was executed, and then Cromwell comes in, takes over, who is a pro-Puritan, and then he dies. And I mean, it's just turmoil after turmoil during this season. There was much social and religious unrest. It was very common. And England's kings very often ruled unjustly. They were very much supporting the high church, the Anglican Church of England, which, as if you know about English history, the high church literally is an offshoot of the Catholic Church. And so much of what you see in Anglican Church back then would be very Catholic in its approach, in its nature. It appears that when Bunyan was born, he was baptized. He was baptized into the church by his parents, but his parents didn't bring him up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. In fact, what history tells us of John Bunyan's life from an early age, he was quite proficient in the use of profanity, even when he was a little boy. And it was during that time that, as he was growing up as a little boy, that King Charles did rule Britain. William Laud, who at that time was the Bishop of Canterbury, William Laud was very supportive, of, obviously, as the Bishop of Canterbury, of the High Church. But not only was he a High Church, the lead official, the Bishop of Canterbury is like the Pope to the Anglican Church. He leads the Anglican Church. Well, William Laud, he hated Puritanism. He hated what he would call nonconformists. They did not conform to the church, the tenets of the Anglican Church. And so he was strongly opposed, particularly to Reformed doctrine. And he did dislike the Puritan movement, which had begun in England decades earlier. And it was in 1620, right around this time, that Bunyan is born, is that the first Puritans make their way to the New World. They make their way to America. And in 1630, there was this major exodus to what we now know as New England, what is called New England. And now, being in the village of Elstow, the Bunyan family was pretty much far removed from the immediate turmoil of England and all the goings on with the monarchy and parliament and even the high church. John's father was a tinker. So he would repair things. He was like a smith as well. So that's what his dad, which did not pay very well. And although John Bunyan was taught to read and write at an early age, he was not actually well educated. He was a typical English village child who would get the elementary education, but then after that, it was done. Bunyan recounts his early days, saying that he soon displayed the evils of a sinful heart. And if any of you have children, you know what that means. He later wrote, he said, "It was my delight to be taken captive by the devil at his will. I had but few equals, both for cursing, swearing, lying, and blaspheming the holy name of God." That's the beginnings, that's the foundation of this young boy named John Bunyan. When he was 9 or 10 years old, he did have encounters with those who were nonconformists, those who were faithful Christians. And so when he was 9 or 10 years old, he said he had nightmares and spasms of conscience that frightened him and made him wish there was no such thing as hell. But being the young man that he was, he said he soon cast those aside and moved back into the life that he had been living. But as he grew older, he became the ringleader of the wayward youth in the village. And he was rebuked and admonished by some older ladies in the village. At age 16, his mom passed away, which was a great shock and misery for him. And after that, he soon joined the British Army, who was involved with a number of civil wars. And he served at a garrison in a place called Newport Pagnell. Now, what is interesting about that is he faced much of the horrors of war. He saw what it took for men to fight in life and death. And one night, and this is where we look back and we can see the providence of God, he said that he was called to stand at post. He was on watch. And but one young man, for whatever reason not given, switched places with him. And shortly thereafter, that young man died when he was shot in the head by the enemy. And so he looks back aware, as Newton did, you know, there. But for the grace of God and the providence of God, my life would have not been spared. Bunyan left the army in 1647, 1 year before Civil War broke out again, and he became a tinker like his dad. He took up his father's profession. Interestingly, in 1905, this is in 1647 that he becomes a tinker. So he's 17 and a half years old. He takes up his dad's profession. In 1905, you know, more obviously a couple hundred years later, his portable anvil with his name inscribed and the year 1647 described right was discovered. And interestingly, like the pilgrim he wrote about, he understood what it meant to carry a burden. It was a portable anvil that weighed about 60 pounds that he would carry around with him. And so you begin to see, as you study the life of John Bunyan, just the regular daily occurrences that helped him write this amazing allegorical story called Pilgrim's Progress, and the weight of the anvil that he carried day in and day out, and in his mind connecting that to the burden and weight of sin that he is carrying around as well. In 1649, King Charles was overthrown and executed as a traitor. So now we have more turmoil in the monarchy. Bunyan marries his first wife that same year. One interesting fact is no one knows the name of his first wife. It's just lost to history. We don't know her name. More trials attend to the family when their firstborn, Mary, is born blind. So their very first girl is born blind. Three more children followed after that. Now Bunyan was in his early 20s when he had his sister died. He had already suffered the death of his mother. He had seen the horrors of war. He had seen his daughter born blind. And because of that, for a number of years, Bunyan rejected the gospel. He ridiculed those who preached. He continued in a sinful lifestyle. And he corrupted those around him. He had a freedom to bring others into his sin. That was John Bunyan's approach to life. But God, in the midst of all of that, and this is why these stories are so just enjoyable to tell, because we see the slavery of sin, we see the ravages of sin upon a person's life, we see the effect and the influence they have in a sinful world, and yet standing behind it all is this wonderful truth of the providence of God, where God is at work, God is moving, God is using circumstances, hidden mysteries behind the lives of every individual, not just John Bunyan, but our lives as well. And so behind this, God is wonderfully at work. And through a series of events, God intervenes. And eventually, Bunyan is convicted of his sin, and he turns to God. One example, and there are a number of books that I want to encourage you to to read on page 7 of this book. One day, Bunyan's work as a tinker took him to Bedford, which was the area, the village of Elstow was outside of the town of Bedford. One day, Bunyan's work as a tinker took him to Bedford, and he came across three or four poor women sitting at a door in the sun talking about the things of God. Considering himself quite a religious man by now, because he had had a religious experience, he went to talk with them. However, what he heard shook him. "I heard, but I understood not," he said, "for they were far above, out of my reach. Their talk was about a new birth, the work of God on their hearts, also how they were convinced of their miserable state by nature. They talked how God had visited their souls with his love in the Lord Jesus, and with what words and promises they had been refreshed, comforted, and supported against the temptation of the devil. They also discoursed of their own wretchedness of heart, their unbelief, and did condemn, slight, and abhor their own righteousness, a filthy and insufficient to do them any good. And I thought, as they spoke, as if joy made them speak." He then goes on to say he simultaneously found his hypocrisy exposed and a desire stirred in his heart to have what these women possessed. So along the way, as a tinker, he suddenly just discovers, I'm not who I say I am. My religious, you know, this conversion I had, my religious life is really not real. There's something to it. So in his Christian years, Bunyan struggled greatly with assurance. And that thankfully finally subsided in 1658, although he had bouts of doubt and a lack of assurance throughout his very significant trial years, not just previously, but in the future. The turning point in Bunyan's life was actually reading Martin Luther's commentary on Galatians. That was the turning point in his life. The opening sentence in that commentary is, "To all afflicted consciences which groan for salvation." And that's what Bunyan read, and it just impacted him. It changed his heart. He said, "That's me. Luther gets what I struggle with. Luther understands." And so that opened the way for Bunyan to eventually grasp the truth of justification by faith and Christ's imputed righteousness credited to every believer, which brought much peace finally to his soul. Excuse me. Now, following his conversion, Bunyan felt a call to preach. And therein lay the difficulty, because religious tolerance had not yet arrived on the scene. William Laud, Bishop of Canterbury, was still persecuting the nonconformists. He was still persecuting Puritans. He was still persecuting the evangelical church, as what we would call it today. And only one state-sanctioned church was given the freedom to enjoy worship, and that was the Anglican Church, the High Church of England. In Bunyan's day, that group at the Church of England licensed people to preach. Well, of course, John Bunyan, this nonconformist, this newly converted man, you know, this Puritan, who that's the what he had adopted. He was a Puritan. He's not licensed to preach. He's not allowed to preach. And as a result, he found himself in and out of prison over a 12-year period, from 1659 to 1671. And while in prison, he ekes out a living by making shoelaces so that he can support his wife and his children. Bunyan wrote of this unforgettable experience, page 9 of this book. It's called John Bunyan and the Grace of Fearing God. I would encourage the read. This man was a man who knew much about suffering and trial, and yet he had found God. And so when you hear him explain his life, you can begin to see parts of Pilgrim's Progress coming to life as he experienced. He goes, one day, as I was passing in the field, this sentence fell upon my soul. Your righteousness is in heaven, the celestial city. Think of that. And I thought withal, I saw with the eyes of my soul, Jesus Christ at God's right hand there. I say was my righteousness so that wherever I was or whatever I was doing, God could not say of me, he lacks my righteousness. I also saw, moreover, that it was not my good frame of heart that made my righteousness better, nor my bad frame that made my righteousness worse, for my righteousness was Jesus Christ himself, the same yesterday, today, and forever. And then he says this, he says, now did my chains fall off my legs indeed. I was loosed from my afflictions and irons. My temptations also fled away. Does not that remind you of Pilgrim's Progress? And his life is Pilgrim's Progress. So it goes, now I went also home rejoicing for the grace and love of God. So think of Christian having the burden at the cross removed when he is in Pilgrim's Progress. And so he goes home rejoicing. That is, to me, I mean, I just to see his life revealed. And so that is the experiences you read about in Pilgrim's Progress, you will read about in the life of John Bunyan. Now, Pilgrim's Progress is considered probably the most published and read book other than the Bible in history. It is an amazing story. And I would encourage you, for your children particularly, John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, as told by Gary Schmidt and illustrated by Barry Moser. And this is a wonderful illustrated version of it. There's also another one called Pilgrim's Progress, A Dangerous Journey, which you might want to consider as well. I just like the illustrations. Bunyan found peace when he was enabled by the Lord to look outside of himself and rest his heart on Christ. That's where he found rest. Now, throughout his life, John Bunyan would face terrible trials in his Christian pilgrimage, which is how he viewed his life. It was a pilgrimage. At times, he struggled with great depression throughout, particularly when he was in prison, and he fretted and understandably so worried about his wife and his children and their care. Yet he persistently demonstrated a remarkable faith and trust in God's goodness. He was a man of undaunted courage, and he had a remarkable spiritual strength to them in light of what he suffered. So even in the midst of his struggles, John Bunyan is drawn into ministry. He was a rare and gifted man who could preach powerfully from the very first. He preached shortly after he was converted, and his preaching was on a level that drew people by the thousands, literally, from the countrysides and from the cities. People from London would make their way to Bedford to hear Bunyan preach. He was that gifted a man. And he was given primarily to telling the story of the gospel. The story of the glorious gospel. That's how he lived. Bunyan, in his mind, could do nothing else. He said this, he did not want to appear before the judgment seat of Christ, knowing he had failed to faithfully live his life to try and persuade others of the gospel. He did not want to appear before the judgment seat of Christ, knowing he had failed to faithfully live his life to try and persuade others of the truth of the gospel. That's what motivated him. Now, 1659, Bunyan marries again. He marries, and we do know his wife's name. Her name is Elizabeth, who became a mother to his four children. And she was an amazing woman. When he's in prison, she actually goes to the high local officials and confronts them on why Bunyan is in prison. And she challenges them, and they are literally, they're just, some are enraged that this woman would even dare to speak to them. Others are just amazed. One One man even comments that she could easily stand in the place of the Queen of England. Her ability to speak was so good. She was a tremendous support for John all through his imprisonment. In fact, there were numerous times during his 12 years of imprisonment that both Elizabeth was told and John was told that if you agree not to preach, you can get out of prison. And neither Bunyan nor his wife would agree to that. That's an amazing woman. So 1660, he's imprisoned for 12 years for preaching the gospel. He just said, don't care, doesn't matter. So he goes out, he preaches the gospel, he gets thrown in prison. Again, like I said, many times he's offered release, he turns them down. And so he suffers greatly in prison, much of what we see in Pilgrim's Progress. You want to see his prison life, that will be revealed in Pilgrim's Progress. He often felt the great pain of separation from Elizabeth and his children. He often would think of his blind daughter and what she was going through, and it would lead him to despair. So while in prison, I mean, the worries that he would have, the bubonic plague is sweeping through London. While in prison, London's great fire burns down much of the city. He's aware of all this, and yet there's nothing he can do to care for and support his family. He finally gets out of prison in 1671. He goes back, goes immediately to preaching. Religious tolerance was softened, and so there was some allowance during those years for him to be able to preach. Now, he just doesn't stop. And as you read his life story, you'll discover that people would actually come outside of the jail, and he would preach through the bars to the people outside the jail to continue the work of ministry, the work of God. But God turned Bedford Village for him, Bedford Village Jail, into a school of faith. It's where Bunyan learned. It's where Bunyan grew. It's where Bunyan became Christ-like. It's where he learned, and this is a phrase that John Piper uses. He said he learned to live upon the God invisible. Bunyan learned to live upon the God invisible. He doesn't see Jesus standing next to him in prison. All this time, all these trials, all these sufferings, all this turmoil, Bunyan is serving the invisible God, which can be a challenge for all of us when we're facing trial and we're facing difficulty. And we're in the midst of suffering and despair, and God is invisible. How do we feel at that moment? Well, he was again imprisoned in 1675 until 1676, and that is when he wrote, so it was his second imprisonment, he wrote Pilgrim's Progress. It was a work produced in the crucible of suffering. It was a work that just exuded, just poured out from his life. Now, Pilgrim's Progress is an allegorical story in which the literal physical level of action is intended as a picture of something else. It's the same as Chronicles of Narnia, which is an allegorical story. Double meaning is at the heart of allegory. So you can read that through Pilgrim's Progress. The details in an allegorical story stand for something else. So Aslan stands for Christ. You know, the Slough of Despond in Bunyan's story is really the pits of despair and sin. I mean, you can see the double meaning. In Pilgrim's Progress, for example, a slough or a bog, modeled incidentally after the notorious bogs on the outskirts of Bunyan's hometown, they stand for spiritual despair over one's lost state. Bunyan was also one of the most, not just famous preachers, he was one of the most popular authors. He wrote countless books while he was in prison. One of his most famous books is entitled Grace Abounding. Do you know this? Grace Abounding to the Chief of Sinners. He and there's just works upon works that he wrote when he was in prison. Theologian John Owen, which we all know, was a contemporary of Bunyan. And he knew Bunyan. And he told King Charles that he would willingly exchange his learning for the tinker's power of touching men's hearts when he preached. When Bunyan was finally freed from prison, he became a Baptist preacher. And if he were living today, we would call him an evangelical Christian, but more specifically, we would call him a Reformed Baptist pastor. That's what we would call him. Well, after his release from prison, he would travel all the way from his native Bedford to London to preach, which was a two-day journey during his day. And on one recorded event, 1,200 Londoners turned out on a cold winter morning to hear Bunyan preach. That's who this tinker was. Uneducated, you know, saved from the slough of despond, and God uses him to this effect. Now, Bunyan dies at the age of 60. He contracts pneumonia from exposure to a drenching rain when he made a two-day trip on horseback to try and help mediate and heal relations between a father and his estranged son. He was buried in a non-conformist cemetery. So he wasn't buried in a Church of England cemetery. He was buried in a non-conformist cemetery in London called Bunhill Fields, which I hope to visit someday. The monument on his tomb is today the most prominent site in the cemetery. On its side is carved the figure of a person carrying a burden on his back. A picture of the most famous moment in Pilgrim's Progress where Christian loses his burden at the foot of the cross. So what can we learn from this man, John Bunyan? I think we have a number of lessons that we can learn. The first one is this. Bunyan's suffering deepened his love for his flock, as our suffering should deepen our love for one another in the church. Suffering often tempts people to distance themselves from the church, when in reality, what it should do is draw us into the church to love those who we can see are suffering as well. So that's the first thing. The second thing, Bunyan's suffering taught him that the Christian life is hard, that following Jesus means the cost is high. He knew that. He counted the cost. He remained in jail for 12 years. He could have been released at any time if he had willingly said, "I will not preach." But the count is high. The cost is high to stand firm for Christ. And Bunyan saw that. But Bunyan's suffering also, thirdly, gave him a passion for Christ and a patience to handle the difficulties of life. The more he suffered, the more passionate he became about Christ. And the more his patience grew to handle the difficulties of life. And not that he didn't struggle with despair and depression and doubt at times in his imprisonment. But you see, his life was always on an upward trajectory. And that's where 12 years in prison, a few short years out, and then back in prison, Pilgrim's Progress is written. The culmination of his experience of Christ in suffering. Fifthly, Bunyan's suffering strengthened his assurance that God is sovereign over all the afflictions of his people and will bring him safely home. Bunyan saw that God is sovereign over all the afflictions of his people. That he is present, he is there. Another thing that he learned is that he understood that it is God who appoints those who shall suffer. God is the one who appoints our suffering. God is the one. He had a deep and an immovable belief in the sovereignty of God over all of life. He could suffer because he knew God was there. God was present. The invisible God was there. He lived with the invisible God in the midst of his suffering. And so he knew that God appointed his suffering. And so he was able to, in the midst of that suffering, in the midst of that appointment, he was able to stand patiently, passionately, faithfully with God to continue to do the work. How often, at times when people suffer, they feel as though they must take a season or a break from ministry, from work and life in the church, when exactly the opposite takes place. Bunyan moved forward. He preached from prison. He wrote from prison. He saw prison as his crucible so that he could become the man that God had called him to be. Finally, Bunyan understood that time is in God's hands, not his. Time is in God's hands, not his. He saw that the key to suffering rightly is to see all the things the hand of a merciful and good and sovereign God, to see that all these things are from his hand, and to live upon the God that is invisible. That is a favorite phrase of mine, to live upon the God that is invisible. He said this, there is more of God to be had in times of suffering than at any other time. There is more of God to be had in times of suffering than at any other time. John Bunyan suffered well because all he knew, because above all, he knew God and he knew the scriptures. He knew God through the scriptures. He was a prolific reader of the Bible. He was a man who knew the Bible. It wouldn't surprise me if he had memorized much, if not all, of the Bible. Charles Spurgeon, who made it a point to read Pilgrim's Progress every year, put it like this with respect to John Bunyan. He said, "Prick him anywhere, and you will find that his blood is Bibline. The very essence of the Bible flows from him. He cannot speak without quoting a text, for his soul is full of the Word of God." That is who John Bunyan is. It is men like this that we can learn. These are ancient words, ancient saints who have laid a pathway for us and given us an example to live by, to say, yeah, we can be imitators of men like this when we face suffering and we face affliction. Lord, thank you for this time to gather to study men that you have worked so powerfully through. Lord, please take these words this morning and may they rest upon the souls of every person here. In Christ's name, amen.